Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. Morning, happy Saturday to you. This is Lainey Kleeman along with my friend
Brian Hawkins here, everybody. Good morning to you.
Good morning. You're listening to The Beacon. How are you? What's going on?
I'm doing great. My mood has picked up significantly.
That's good, because you were a little salty just a little while ago. So I'm happy to hear that your mood's picked up a little bit.
Well, there was an incident in the studio right before taping. I had some information and someone walked off with it, so I had to print it all out again. But the good news is it will be somewhere in the 40s today, weather-wise.
That is good news. Mm-hmm. It's been frigid.
Yeah, I was surprised to learn that it was unseasonably cold. So the temperatures we experienced the last week or so have been lower than what they should have been.
Which is interesting, because last year they were unseasonably high. Do you remember we had no measurable snowfall in 2017, in winter 2017?
No, I don't remember that.
Yeah. Oh, I do. I do. Because it was, I didn't wear a winter jacket, I think, after the new year of 2017. I mean, it was in the 40s and 50s consistently.
Yeah. Well, there may have been a couple of 20s and 30s.
There might have been, yeah. But it was very, very unseasonably warm and no snow. So, I mean, just this year alone already, you know, we've seen a substantial amount of snow, which I don't mind it. I like it.
Might even get up to about 49 this week.
So. Yeah, we're getting a warm up and it's going to rain, so it'll probably wipe all the snow away.
And then it'll come back.
It'll come back. It's all right. We got a couple more months to endure, and then we'll turn the corner. We'll get there.
Yeah, we will. Earlier today, I saw you were chomping on a bit of candy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still
peppermint
fresh?
Bark. Peppermint, it is not. Bark. It is not fresh. Oh. The peppermint was a little sticky, you know, like not crisp and crunchy, but still chocolate. Chocolate's chocolate, so I got no complaints.
Well, you know where you can find really good sweets?
Where? Do tell.
Well, that'll be Thursday, February 1st. From 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at Carnival, which is 702 West Fulton Street. And it's organized by the Chicago Lighthouse Junior Board. What am I talking about? Sweets for Sight. And it'll feature drinks, hors d'oeuvres, entertainment, and, of course, plenty of sweets and other highlights, including a raffle, a silent auction, and a wine grab.
A wine grab? What's that?
I guess where you grab wine. I don't know exactly, so we'll have to turn up and find out.
Very intuitive of you.
Yes.
Well, that sounds like a lot of fun. And Carnival is a great restaurant. Have you ever been to Carnival?
No, I have not.
It's fun. I was only there once, but it's very festive and very, you know, raucous. And if you're there, you're there to have a good time. All so right. The drinks flow and the sweets will be, I don't know.
So
sweet,
I'm
and the
sure.
Wine will be ready to grab. So it sounds like a great night.
Yeah, it does. So you can get your tickets by calling Lindsay Inglis, and her phone number, you're probably wondering, is
buy time. Vamp.
Da, 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 da.
You got it. It's coming. Sweets for Sight. I'm going to sing a little song about it.
Oh, that definitely going to get it now.
Sweets for Sight. Oh. You're going to want. Did you find it? Conveniently, right as my song was really starting to hit its pace.
Area code 312-447-3448. Or Lindsay, Lindsay.Inglis, Inglis, at ChicagoLighthouse.org. And then those of you interested can ask her what a wine grab is.
I love it. Sounds great.
So the question that remains, who's on the show today?
Oh, good question. Let me tell you. We have David Jepson, CEO of Computers for the Blind, which is a nonprofit that refurbishes computers and then redistributes them to people who are blind at low cost.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And then we are talking to
Corrine Grusbeck of the Perkins School for the Blind. And she'll be talking about their Blind New World campaign that aims to demystify blindness for, I guess, the general public.
And, so that's nice.
Yeah.
You get a lot of people. And I hear this a lot in the deaf community because I work with deaf. And when I meet people who, like this week, I worked with an occupational therapist who had never, ever before had a deaf client. I was interpreting for her deaf client. And, you know, it's just like, it's such a big mystery. And then suddenly we have a client who's deaf or blind in this case. And like, what do we do? And, you know, demystifying the stigma is, I think, a very important part of the education that is necessary to, you know, sort of provide access and integrate everybody into one big population.
Yeah, because a lot of times I get questions about, like, I also, during the week, am the director for Chris Radio, and the volunteers come in, and one of the things that we provide are job ads. And I'll give them a job ad, and they'll say, well, you know, can a blind person do this, or can a blind person do that? And I said, sure, depending upon, you know, and one of the jobs that they had a question about was being a cook and a chef. And I said, sure. And Brett was here. And then, of course, he was able to explain how they are able to be a chef and a cook. So it's really great that they have this particular campaign.
That is. That's really nice.
Yeah. And just mentioning Sandy and Brett, they'll be here and they'll have reviews on the latest, another talk for everybody. And then, of course, the Off Factor.
We're bringing it local today.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. And then Luke's Laboratory.
Cool.
So all of those things are coming up next right here on The Beacon. This is WCPT 820 AM.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Good morning, everyone. You know, we've all seen the power of social media, blogs, and other websites that have helped create more awareness of different issues that we might not have been familiar with before. And one of those topics nowadays is the topic of disabilities, and in this particular case, blindness and vision loss. Today, joining us from the Perkins School for the Blind is Corinne Grausbeck. Corinne, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sandy.
Great. Well, Corinne, I know that you're the chair of the board of directors at the Perkins School for the Blind, and you're also the parent of a blind child.
That's correct.
And, you know, I know that this, you know, leads into your campaign, you know, called A Blind New World, you know, which I think is an interesting title to begin with. Can you tell us a little, first of all, what inspired you to create this campaign?
Well, sure. Thank you, Sandy. You know, the impetus for the campaign, obviously, was my son and watching him grow up. He's almost 25 years old now.
Sure.
So I really have been able to have the pleasure of observing him and his experiences as he, you know, grows up and gains new skills and learns to kind of navigate the world, quite literally. And I just thought, you know, this child, I watch him work every day so hard. I actually don't think children who are blind play. I think everything from, you know, all their downtime, all their play time is really spent learning, comparing, understanding. And he works so hard to be where he is. And, you know, to have society look at him like, and literally ask me the question, well, what can he do? I just thought, that is such the wrong way to look at it. It's like they're expecting me to give them a short laundry list of what he's capable of doing.
Yep.
And I felt like saying, well, there's almost nothing he can't do.
Yeah.
And So I, you know, had that experience so many times, and I just felt he was getting sort of under, you know, just undersold, and people didn't have high expectations for him, and this was trickling into his ability to, you know, proceed after Perkins, go to college, go to get main, you know, mainstream, and get a job.
Sure.
Again, that question of, well, what can he do?
Yeah.
Kept surfacing. So, yeah, the idea behind an awareness campaign was to sort of, first of all, take that first layer of, you know, demystifying blindness a little bit, get people kind of comfortable. Not everybody runs into people who are blind in their daily life.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, still a pretty low incidence, you know, situation. And I find that when people would run into my son, they almost were afraid to lean in and approach and connect with him because they were afraid they were going to make a mistake or say something wrong.
That's it.
So the first layer was, let's get people comfortable with the thought of blindness and with people who are blind, and by showing them the ways people who are blind do things that the sighted people do.
Absolutely. And I know that, you know, a lot of the material for the campaign itself, you know, it's a combination of videos, blog posts, social media posts. Can you talk a little bit about the different content that people can find?
Sure. So if you go to blindnewworld.org, that's the website we used as our platform.
Mm-hmm.
Initially we created two videos. And I think the beautiful thing about the videos is they're very daily life, matter of fact.
Very much so.
Part of them could be sighted or not sighted.
Mm-hmm.
One video focuses more on a young man who's taking an Uber or a Lyft type of ride to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the driver initially sort of looking at him awkwardly, not knowing what to talk about, finally asks that question, you know, so you're blind,
yeah.
Like, everybody asks.
Exactly.
And, right. And you know, the young man is not only is he blind, but he works for a high-tech firm. He just got promoted. He's on his way to New York City for a conference, and he's traveling independently.
Mm-hmm.
And these are all things that are somewhat eye-opening to the sighted world, but it's, you know, you and I both know that blind people do that every day.
Absolutely.
And so it's a nice gut check for somebody, you know, listening to this spot to say, wow,
mm-hmm.
shame on me for being surprised that
mm-hmm.
somebody who's blind could actually do that if they can. There's a place where you can post your blind selfie, and we've had people who are blind post as well as people who are sighted.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the ones, people who are blind, we have like a woman jumping out of an airplane. We have, you know, lots of people going on hikes who are blind, and it shows the breadth of what people who are blind can do. And every single contributor helps break down the barriers to inclusion.
And yeah. I know you mentioned the website, but what other platforms is the campaign on? Is it on Facebook, Twitter? What other sites?
Well, that's a great question. We launched largely to be a social media
mm-hmm.
online
sure.
campaign, because what we really are looking for is interaction and connection. So, you know, we are on social media, blindnewworld.org. We have a Facebook page. We have 75,000 followers.
Wow.
Who are really helping build a community. We have lots of, you know, we post things, and, you know, sometimes we get feedback from people who are blind who are like, you know, this is kind of condescending. And the same point or tip, we'll get feedback from people who are excited who say, gosh, there's a blind person in my, you know, work group,
mm-hmm.
and that tip was so helpful, I never would have thought of that.
Mm.
So, you know, you get all sorts of feedback, and, you know, we understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And we also then went on to do another campaign through an organization called Upworthy, which was also on Facebook, and you can find that also on blindnewworld.org.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really a fun campaign to really highlight sort of the plethora of things that blind people do, like, you know, starting with skiing and running groups and giving presentations at work. And, you know, and there's so many quick edits to all these things that people do. It really helps, you know, the sighted world, you know, open up their minds to, wow, look at that. And I've had people actually stop me and say to me proudly, you know, like, you know, work in a high tech company. And last week we brought in, you know, someone who's blind for an interview. And, you know, I read through some of your tips and they were really helpful. And this guy is superstar and we're hiring him. I mean, just
that's wonderful.
Anecdotes like that just make me so happy.
Yeah, I'm sure. Very rewarding, I'm sure, on a personal level.
Right.
For anyone that's interested to check out the website, can you repeat that again, Corinne?
Yes, it's blindnewworld.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Corinne.
Okay. Thank you again, Sandy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Coach Mike Ditka. I'm asking you to support my friends at the Chicago Lighthouse, who are providing critical educational services to children who are blind, visually impaired, or multi-disabled. Through its innovative preschool, Birth to Three, and other cutting-edge programs, the Lighthouse is making a big difference in the lives of these children.
This is Dr. Janet Slick, President and CEO of the Chicago Lighthouse. These are exciting times here at the Chicago Lighthouse. The Chicago Lighthouse provides a community of comprehensive care for people who are blind, visually impaired, disabled, and veterans. To find out how you can help, call 312-997-3675 or visit us at chicagolighthouse.org.
Welcome back. I'm Lainey Kleeman.
And I'm Brian Hawkins here.
You're listening to The Beacon.
Yes.
Mr. Brian, what do you have over there? Something that made me knock my head against the microphone, I'm sure, again.
Well, our friends at Facebook have been busy.
As always.
Yes, they're developing a gadget, a portal, which will put microphones and cameras in people's homes. Huh? I'm sure you're already ready for that.
I'm so over all of it. Why? What's the point? Tell me. Please tell me how it's going to benefit us some great way.
Well, it's expected to use facial recognition to allow people to log into their accounts without having to type in passwords. And it'll be dedicated to video chat. It'll cost about a whopping $500. And so they want to have this in your home, and you can use that to log on to Facebook and make things easier for you to share.
What's your opinion about something like this?
I think it could be fun, but there is some controversy because of the privacy implications of letting Facebook's cameras and microphones into your home. You don't know if it's just kind of like Samsung's television and also to some degree the Echo and all those kind of things. People are kind of wondering, even though you think it's off, well, is it really off and not recording you when you don't want it to record you or pick up conversations in your home?
I'm 100% shaking my head over here.
Mm-hmm.
No,
yes, you are.
It's
and
not.
So you don't really know.
Can I tell a story about that?
Sure.
Are you done? Or can I interject and then you can finish?
Sure.
I was talking to my daughter about wanting to go on to like a third world country and help build homes or, you know, go on some sort of trip for a couple of weeks. And literally, I've never, my phone, we were like in the car having a conversation. My phone had nothing to do with it. My phone wasn't even on. It was like probably in my purse, or maybe I had the GPS on or something like that. I didn't Google it. Nothing with my phone was involved with this conversation I had about my daughter going to build homes in, you know, an under-resourced country. The next day, guess what pops up in my newsfeed? An advertisement for 11 to 15-year-olds, which is the age range that my daughter is in, to go on a service trip to a third world country to help build homes.
You're kidding.
I am 100% not kidding.
And your phone was off.
It wasn't off. Like, it wasn't powered off, but I wasn't using it. And I didn't Google any trips for her, and I didn't search anything, like, didn't even touch my phone. It was a conversation I had with my soon-to-be 12-year-old, which, again, somehow they knew how to target the age. But the very next day, these ads started popping up in my Facebook feed. So I mean, I was furious. Like, that, there is no way that that's a coincidence. No way. So if you think they're not listening, trust me, they are listening. And I am not being a conspiracy theorist here. This happened. Continue, please.
Well, you know, last year, Facebook admitted its own research wing was working on technology which can read people's minds at 100 words per minute. So I don't know where that is.
Read people's minds?
100 words per minute. So Facebook is out there. And, of course, this portal, I think they're going to release it in about May. And so it'll feature a 15-inch screen, a wide-angle camera with facial recognition and microphones to allow voice control.
Not going to happen in our home.
But, you know, another nicer use of computers.
David Jepson.
Yes.
Yes.
Computers for the Blind.
This nonprofit. I can get behind.
Okay.
This I can support.
They refurbish computers and redistributed them to the blind. And then that way they can get the technology, the assistive technology like JAWS and other things to help them get on the internet. Let's find out what he has to say.
Good morning, everyone. This is Sandy. And, you know, here on the Beacon, we often talk about assistive technology. And one of the barriers for people who are blind or visually impaired is to purchase the technology. You know, as we know, a lot of the products have a very high cost. But there are thankfully nonprofit organizations that are working so that people who are blind or visually impaired will have access to the technology world. And today I'm speaking with David Jepson, who is the CEO of the organization Computers for the Blind. David, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
Wonderful. Well, David, I spoke with you a few years ago for my former radio show, and, you know, you guys have a wonderful mission. Can you tell us a little bit of background about your organization, what you do?
Certainly. We've been around for over 25 years, and we refurbish no longer needed computers and provide them to persons who are blind that could otherwise not afford them.
Mm-hmm.
We have volunteers that wipe the hard drives clean. They clean out all the dust bunnies. They make whatever repairs that are necessary. And then they install the assistive technology that make them accessible to persons who are blind.
Now, I know that you guys are based in Texas. Does your program to people from all over the United States qualify? Or can you talk a little bit about the requirements?
Sure. To be eligible to receive one of our computers, a person... just has to have a visual impairment that interferes with his ability to use the computer without screen magnification or speech technology. And we serve the entire country. In fact, we have several state agencies that we are on their list of providers. So we can provide computers if they are associated with a state agency for the blind, the agency can purchase a computer for them through us.
Can you talk a little bit about what is included on the computers?
Sure. Yeah, our computers are the minimum specifications are a dual core processor. They got at least 4 gigabytes of RAM and 120 gigabyte hard drive, and then persons can add additional memory if they'd like. They come with speakers, keyboard, mouse, and everything that they need to use the internet and email and all that sort of thing. We have laptops as well as desktops. And we have larger flat-screen monitors for those that have low vision. They come with generic versions of Microsoft Office software. They have pre-installed NVDA, which is non-visual display access screen reader. It's similar to JAWS, and then we also have the JAWS demo version. It also includes Magic, which is the fully licensed copy from Freedom Scientific, It does not have a speech with it, but it's a fully licensed screen magnification software.
Mm-hmm.
In addition, we have a demo version of Talking Typing Teacher. If you're not familiar with it, it's made by Marvelsoft, and it comes with several lessons that a person can try out. It retails for $100, but we have got it down to $10 for persons who purchase it for use on our computers due to various grants and so forth.
Can you talk a little bit about the pricing? Is it reduced pricing to obtain a computer?
Sure, sure. We strive very hard to keep the price as low as possible. The desktop computer is $110, mm-hmm. and the laptop is $130. Now, our expenses are much higher than that, so the price will likely go up slightly in the near future. However, persons who are on SSI or SSDI due to their blindness, and parents of visually impaired youth can obtain a desktop computer for only $50. So these are affordable to almost everybody.
Well, and, you know, moving on, not only do you provide computers, but you also have a movie lending library, movies with audio description. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, we have a very extensive lending library of descriptive videos. The cost of that is $25 for a lifetime membership, mm-hmm. and it works just like the Talking Book program,
mm-hmm.
where you can request the titles, and we send them to you, and then when you're done, you just send them back to us, Free Matter for the Blind. And they come in a DVD mm-hmm. Format, and persons can contact us, and we can provide them with a list of the titles that we have. We have several hundred movies. Most of them are older, though.
Well, David, it was great to follow up with you again, and we wish you the best of luck with this wonderful project.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for allowing us to be on your program today.
Well, everyone, this is The Lighthouse Beacon. We'll be right back.
I wasn't prepared to be a caregiver to mom. I had no idea how hard it would be and what I would need to know. Things I never thought of, like how to improve her mood and ways for me to stay positive. Luckily, I found the Caregiving Resource Center from AARP. It had articles about the basics, but also information about the hurdles I was facing. Caregiving Resource Center at aarp.org/caregiving. Articles, tips, and tools to help you both care for your loved one and care for yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. This is The Lighthouse Beacon. I am Sandy Murillo.
And I am Brett Shishkoff.
How are you, Brett?
I am doing awesome.
Wonderful.
It's the weekend.
Exactly.
It's time to party.
What else can we ask for?
Me and you have been very, very busy. We have
exactly.
a new segment that we're trying to implement here on The Lighthouse Beacon. And do you want to tell them what name we've given it, Sandy?
Yeah, so it's called It's Highly Recommended, and it has to do with reviews. Things like performances, movies.
Why don't we get right into it? Yours is pretty cool, so I want to get into what you have to say about, you went to go and check out Hamilton.
I actually did, Brett. As I've been telling our listeners for the last couple of weeks, I was fortunate enough to get my hands on a couple tickets for Hamilton, so I went along with my mom. We went on Sunday afternoon, mm-hmm. which was perfect because it was a three-day weekend for a lot of us.
Yep.
And, you know, Brett, I don't even know where to start. You know, first of all, this was an audio-described performance
mm-hmm.
of Hamilton. You know, so that is, like, one of the first things that drew me into, you know, looking into possibly attending.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have to tell you, Brett, the audio description, you know, I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as you know, Hamilton, it's a very fast-paced musical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot of hip-hop, and the audio description had to be perfectly synchronized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there is a lot of fast-paced singing and dancing, and so the audio describer, which, you know, she was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd hear, like, King George enters the stage, or, you know, very brief descriptions,
mm-hmm.
whereas opposed to in a... another play, like a regular play, that, mm-hmm. you know, the descriptions might be a little more detailed.
Right.
But something that, you know, as you know, Brett, the plays with audio description, they'll have about 15, 20 minutes beforehand of the audio describer saying what's going on,
mm-hmm.
what types of costumes, you know, are worn by the actors, how the actors look. I found, Brett, you know, this is my ultimate recommendation, that if you are going to attend, you know, audio-described Hamilton or any type of musical, you have to listen to those, you know, 15 or 20 minutes beforehand of audio description.
Yeah, especially if there's a theater that's not offering a touch tour beforehand.
Exactly, which mm-hmm. in this case it wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, Hamilton was not.
I actually was out this past weekend myself. I was able to get out. Saturday, I went and saw Too Hot to Handle mm-hmm. over at the Auditorium Theater.
Right.
Too Hot to Handle is based off of Handel's Messiah.
Sure.
So it's based off of like an opera, classical music, but yeah. this is kind of jazz and gospel combined into one. Some opera in there as well. So a few different styles of music that you don't really think would go together very well.
Sure.
The musicians were fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, instrumentally, the orchestra, they were great. I think the highlight for me was probably the stand-up bass.
Mm-hmm.
He was awesome. And then they also had a phenomenal keyboard player, piano player. And he kind of showed off the last song, being able to do kind of a solo himself. And then the rest of the orchestra eventually came back in. But he just kept getting faster and faster, playing different types of songs that most of us would know.
Sure.
But it was so much fun. Like, the first act, it started off really good, and then it kind of slowed down.
Uh-huh.
If I did have just kind of like one note, I felt like they probably, with like the soprano voice, she seemed to try and run up and down.
Mm-hmm.
The scale a little bit too much, you know, somewhat kind of like similar to like Christina Aguilera or Mariah Carey, how they
sure.
they like to kind of play with their vocal
yes.
fireworks.
Yep.
In some of those songs, I felt like it was a little too much,
uh-huh.
but that was mainly in the first act. I thought both the tenor and the alto voices
mm-hmm.
were phenomenal, especially the tenor. He has a very good operatic voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was able to run up and down the scale, but it didn't seem like it was overly done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really fit his voice very, very well.
Sure.
They did have a choir there as well, and the choir was good. I thought that it could have been mixed a little bit better. Like, it was hard to hear over the orchestra of what the choir was singing because
mm-hmm.
they were behind the orchestra.
Sure.
So those are kind of like my notes of like kind of things for next year, because they do it every year. They've been doing it for quite a while. It's always on the weekend of Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah.
So I went last year. Last year's was a little bit of a better performance than this year, but it was still good. But
sure.
I went on Sunday
mm-hmm.
last year. This year I went on Saturday.
Yeah.
So they only have two performances. So I was on that, you know, first performance, and they probably work out a lot of the things that that popped up in the first performance, and that second performance is probably a little bit more polished.
Mm-hmm. Great. Brett, on February 10th, the Chicago Lighthouse and the American Theater Company are partnering to do a touch tour and audio described performance of We're Gonna Be Okay. And this deals with the missile crisis and our president, JFK, John F. Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are inviting anyone who might be interested. Again, that is on Saturday, February 10th at the American Company Theater. We will be sharing more details in the next the upcoming shows. But for more information, you can visit our website, which is www.chicagolighthouse.org.
Well, I think that's enough of us for this week. We will be back next week. You are listening to the Chicago Lighthouse Beacon on WCBT 820 AM. We'll be right back.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Well, we're back, everybody, here on The Beacon. I'm Brian Hawkins.
I'm Lainey Kleeman.
Yes, you are. And you know, Lainey, it's been a while since we've talked about Chris Radio, and I thought I would mention that because, you know, it's primarily on the internet now. So you can go to the Chicago Lighthouse website and you can listen to the feed there. Now, some folks may be asking themselves, what is Chris Radio? Well, it stands for the Chicago Radio Information Service. And for folks who are experiencing vision loss and love to get the newspaper readings verbatim, local newspapers, and also other things too, magazines and all those things. We have lots of volunteers who devote their time. They come in and they read those things, and we broadcast them just like a regular radio. And the great thing about it is you can, if you have access on a computer, you can go to the Chicago Lighthouse website, as I said, or you can download the TuneIn app on your smartphone and search for Chris Chicago and make it your favorite, and then you'll be able to hear all of that Chris has to offer.
And which is plentiful.
Yes, which is plentiful. And it's on other platforms as well. So if you have any questions or anything like that, please feel free to call me. And my number is area code 312-997-3687.
Love it.
How about that? I didn't mess up my own phone number.
That's impressive, considering you've been here for like 2,000 years.
2001.
Oh, see, I was close. Darn it.
Yes. And, you know, it's great that with the weather being warmer and all those other things going on, and, of course, there's the football game. And so there's lots of things that we can be happy about. But we're not going to stop there, because you have a local story that should make us all feel warm and fuzzy.
Thank you, Brian. So we're talking about, like as Brian said, a local story. This happened on one of the L trains here in Chicago just last Friday, I believe. Jessica Bell, who is an attorney and advocate in Chicago here, was riding the L home late last Friday evening when she witnessed a spontaneous act of kindness that brought tears to her eyes. A homeless man, who later had said he was from Louisiana, pulled his swollen feet from a flimsy pair of running shoes that were obviously not intended for Chicago winter. And, you know, last week it was absolutely frigid outside. So very ill-equipped and certainly not keeping him warm. The shoes, the backs on the shoes were folded down like slippers because his shoes were not big enough for his feet. He had plenty of socks on, but she wrote on Facebook that, you know, despite the several layers of socks he had on, there was still blood seeping through the socks. So he was in rough shape. He was in very, very rough shape. This is when she witnessed 38-year-old Maurice Anderson, who was traveling back to his hometown to visit his daughter. Maurice Anderson as well witnessed this homeless man and his, you know, the problems he was having with his shoes. And he suddenly had the idea to give his own boots that were on his feet to this homeless man. But he kind of had a little conversation with himself because he just bought the boots a couple weeks ago, paid $260 for the boots. So they were really nice, comfy winter boots. But he said within seconds he was unlacing them, asking the homeless man what size shoe he wore. The homeless man said he was a size 12 and Maurice was a 12 and a half. So perfect size to fit this homeless gentleman with his several layers of socks on. So The woman, Jessica Bell, says, you know, quietly in a blink and you'll miss it fashion, the younger man takes off the boots he's wearing and passes them to the older gentleman. He also opens his suitcase and gives the gentleman clean pairs of socks as well, because he was traveling to visit his daughter. So he had a suitcase full of clothes with him. Maurice then pulled out a spare pair of shoes from his suitcase and put those on himself. And Jessica said, you know, they were nice, but they weren't nearly as nice as the boots. So Maurice could very easily have given the homeless man the not-so-nice pair of shoes that, mm-hmm. you know, were still better than what he had. But he didn't. He gave him his brand-new boots that he paid nearly $300 for. The gentleman believed his feet probably already had frostbite, you know, and so was just trying to do what he could to help the situation. And she says, the reason I posted about Maurice is because we've all given or we've seen people give food or money to the homeless. But she's never seen somebody literally give the clothes off their back to this gentleman. So I think that it's very important to remember to be kind to people, especially in this cold weather. You know, there's a lot of people out there who really are not as fortunate as we are and can use any little bit of help that you can offer. It doesn't need to be a $300 pair of boots, but you know, I tend to feel like if there's somebody, and I don't carry cash with me, so I don't give money to homeless, but I certainly, you know, I've seen homeless on trains and I'll give them, you know, water bottles or whatnot. Like it, what I have that can be offered, mm-hmm. I do try and provide that. And I just think, you know, we just, again, the sort of the moral of this segment is just be kind to one another, because there's always somebody who can use that kindness. And thankfully for our friend Maurice, he happened to be in a place where he could help this gentleman in need. And I got to imagine that those boots really came in handy.
Yeah.
Or wow. Footy. But I'm
boom, boom. Yeah, rim shot.
So that is this week's The Awe Factor.
Ah, that's a nice story.
Thank you.
I can't believe that he would actually take the clothes. I've never seen that either. Someone offer up the clothes off their back or the shoes off their feet for someone else. But the guy was in totally bad shape.
Right.
And so now he had some boots, and hopefully he's able to make use of those. And I hope he didn't have frostbite.
I hope not either. And hopefully he'll get the help that he needs. And this story has gone a bit viral. So hopefully there are people out there who can reach out to, you know, to these gentlemen. And Maurice, the gentleman who gave the boots, was actually traveling to and from because he had to leave his hometown to find work. So so there was something in the story, and it was a bit unclear, but you know, this is a gentleman who clearly has a wonderful heart and probably a love, you know, a great work ethic. And so hopefully through this story, people can reach out to these gentlemen and give them some help.
Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
And you know what else is nice? Pizza.
Pizza.
I love pizza. And it's a staple at my house, particularly on the weekends when there's lots of sports and all those kinds of mm-hmm. things. But our friends over at the Hut, they are changing the way that they deliver their pizza a little bit. At least in the future they will be. They'll be offering driverless delivery.
You know, I've been hearing so much about this driverless trend, but I have yet to see it in action.
Mm. Well, they say that a lot of people are up in arms because they think that jobs will be lost by the drivers. But they say that this will boost more jobs because then the drivers can concentrate on customer service and, you know, they'll still have a job.
Will the driver still be in the car, like,
no,
walking the pizza up to the person?
No. Or see, that's my concern. It's
right.
Like, okay, so it's supposed to be delivery, but now are you saying I have to go out right. to the van?
I have to walk 20 steps out to pick the pizza out of the car?
Well, if you live in a high rise. So.
That's true.
But
that's
still, the whole idea is that it's supposed to be delivery.
Right. Hello, not, Pizza Hut.
Not we'll drive by your house and drop it off. Come out
toss
and
it
get
out the
it.
Window.
Right.
Catch
but,
it if you can.
Yeah, so they're partnering with Toyota on driverless delivery. So that's something that we can all look forward to.
And I'm still confused how it creates jobs.
Well, I think that, you know, if you hire someone for the customer service part where they monitor the vans to make sure that the peaches are being delivered and there's no problems that way, but then you can have one person monitor like several different vans.
Exactly.
And, yeah. So, you know, I think it might cut jobs a little bit, but
it seems like a stretch. It seems like they're trying to put a positive spin on it, but they're not really explaining how. But all right, driverless delivery.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes for
you. This modern technology is something else.
Yes.
But these next two guys, they have their own version of it. And hopefully this will be helpful to a lot of folks. And that would be Luke Scriven and Juan Suarez. They're in Luke's laboratory.
I'm Juan Suarez right here on WCPT 820 AM. And we've got the keys, so let's open up Luke's laboratory. Good morning, Mr. Luke. How are you?
I am doing good. How are you today?
I'm great. And this is, of course, the portion of the Beacon where we talk about everything technology. It's exciting because today we are demoing. What are we doing, Luke?
So we're going to do a live demonstration of the Seeing AI app. It is an app you can download for the iPhone. Also works on the iPad, but it's designed for the iPhone. I have seen a few kind of weird problems when you download it on the iPad, but that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try. And it does a number of different things. It has a bunch more features that I'm not going to be demonstrating. Things like it can identify a banknote that you put in front of it. You can take a picture of a room and it will tell you something about the room. It can identify colors. It can identify products if you take a picture of their barcode. So all sorts of really cool things.
All right. So how much time do we need to get going?
I have the iPad in front of me, and I've opened up the Seeing AI app. And on the bottom of the screen, we have the different functions. And the function that I'm going to be using, first of all, there she speaks, is the document function. So let me explain what's going to happen here. I've got a flyer, and it's got a bunch of printed text on it. And I'm going to hold my iPad above the flyer, and the iPad is going to tell me what edges it can see. And the idea is it wants to see all four edges of the paper, and then it will take a picture, and then it will process the image, and then it will start to read the text that was on the paper to me.
And then left edge is not visible.
Okay,
left
so you can hear it telling us what it can see. And once I get it high enough, it will tell me to hold steady. So now it plays this little tune, which I personally really enjoy. And it's going to, once it finishes playing that tune, that means that it's ready to read to us. So it usually takes a few seconds just to go through the processing here. All right, so now the tune stopped. I can actually see the text on the screen of the iPad as well, and I can magnify it if I want to read along. But if I just press a play button in the bottom left-hand side here, you're going to hear.
Locations, the Chicago Lighthouse, 1850 W. Roosevelt Road, Chicago, Illinois, 60608, 800. 919-3375.
All right, great. I'm going to stop it there. So it would have read the entire page to me if I had wanted it to do so. And I can change the voice. If I don't like the voice, I can use a different one. I can change the speed that it's reading. I can change the volume and all sorts of great things like that. So that is the document function. All right, let's move on to the next function. It's the handwriting function. So this is basically the same thing that we just did, but using this function, we can read handwriting. And so if you imagine you receive a letter, a handwritten letter, you receive a card or something like that, you can use this function to read those things to you. So I'm going to go ahead and write something on this pad of paper I have in front of me. And hopefully we're going to be able to read this. I just realized my pen isn't working very well, so this will be an extra double hard challenge for the Seeing AI app here. So we're going to go to our handwriting mode.
Handwriting preview.
Okay, and I'm going to go ahead and hold my my iPad above the thing that I just wrote, and I'm going to take a picture of it.
Processing.
Okay, let's see what she can do.
All right.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed on this one. I should say this mode is still in beta. Oh, did you hear that?
It said, hello, everyone.
And that's exactly what I had written. So that is pretty awesome, yes.
And the fact that it's able to read handwriting, that's That's pretty amazing, considering handwriting's unique.
Yes, this is, as far as I know, this is the only thing that can actually read handwriting. And not only can it do it, but it does a really good job. Now, obviously, if you get very cursive script, then it can struggle a little bit. But everything I've tested it on, it's done a good job. And even if it misses some words, you can still get the general gist of what's being said. So, okay, we have one more function to test today. And that's going to be our facial recognition side of things. You can save people in here, and then it will identify the specific person when you take a picture of them. But for the purposes of this demonstration, we're just going to take a picture, and it's going to tell us a little bit about the person. So it won't identify them by name, but it will tell us something about the person in terms of their expression and in terms of whether they're male or female, and it will take an estimate of their age as well. So, Juan, I hope you're ready for this, because you are going to be the the subject of this.
All right.
All right, so we're going to go to person mode.
Person, one face near, top right, 2 feet away.
Okay, so it's told me that there's a person in front of me. Way. All right, so now we're going to take a picture. We know there's a person there. It's going to make
49-year-old man with black hair looking neutral.
All right, now I don't want to say how accurate or inaccurate that age might be, but...
That's pretty close.
Okay.
Not bad.
All right, there we go. I have found, and I don't know if this is the case, but I have found personally when using it, it tends to underestimate the age of the women and overestimate the age of the men. So I don't know if that was deliberately put in there by Microsoft, but that certainly seems to be the case from my experimentation. But yeah, it's really pretty impressive technology, so... highly recommend that people download the app and try it out if they have an Apple device. And if you need assistance on using it, you can call us 312-997-3649. And you can also send me an email at Luke, Luke.Scriven, Scriven, at chicagolighthouse.org. I do also want to say that for those of you who have Apple devices and maybe got them for Christmas and aren't really sure how to use them, we do have both in-home and on-site training available. On-site would be $35 an hour. In-home would be $60 an hour. And we have a lady who worked at Apple for 15 years, and she's also visually impaired herself, and she's a really great teacher on all things Apple. And myself, I can teach on Android devices if that's what you have instead. So again, you can contact me at the details I gave previously if you would like to organize that beneficial.
All right, that's awesome. And with that, how about this week's
Customer of the Week? And this week is actually Customers of the Week, as I sometimes do, because I have a bunch of people that I had a great time with on Wednesday of this week. And I went to a senior living facility known as Monarch Landing. I was invited there by the Low Vision support group, and they're located in Naperville. And there was, I think, around 15 seniors there who were all visually impaired, varying levels of vision and varying diagnoses. And I thought to myself, well, I'm going to go there, I'm going to teach them something, and, you know, it's going to be a good time. Well, it was a good time, but I didn't really teach them anything. They taught me something because they were so tuned in to their technology. It was unbelievable. They knew everything about all the latest apps. They were all using all these different smart devices. They were all up to date with the different electronic magnifiers and the OCR devices and everything. And we had a really good time. I went to one of their rooms and worked with them with Seeing AI a little bit because they were having a problem. And we discussed some of the new technologies, Iris Vision and the new Orcam there. But yeah, it was a really good fun for everybody. I hope that they learned something. I definitely learned something from them, and hopefully I can go back again in the future.
That does it for this week's edition of Luke's Laboratory right here on The Beacon.
The Lighthouse Endowment Campaign is an ongoing campaign to help secure the future of the Chicago Lighthouse for the 67,000-plus patients, clients, and families that utilize our services each year.
Being a veteran here, I think, has helped me. I could not see, because this is why I initially was brought here by a counselor from the VA, because like, they collaborate with each other. and help us to get our vision better. When I first walked in here, I didn't know the life of a blind person. I actually didn't know. And when I came here, I walked through the door and I could see how people so, you know, they act like they could see. And it was so inspirational to me. I cried like a kid when I first got it because I was overwhelmed to see how people can deal with blindness, you know. And the Lighthouse really, really has helped me with a lot of things because I've learned to be more knowledgeable about computers. And they have an exercise class that they teach us how to exercise. So every fourth Friday of the month, we have a luncheon where all the seniors meet. We sit there and talk about different events and different things. And my greatest passion right now is being on the radio, reading to the blind. That's my greatest passion. I really love that. Number one is to be able to give back to people that can't see, because I was overwhelmed. And I promise God within myself that I will do this until I cannot see again. This is my greatest passion in my life.
Historically, our endowment fund has helped maintain critical programs on the verge of shutting down, preserve jobs in times of economic stress, and meet the growing demand for vision care services among America's aging population. To make a contribution, please contact Jennifer Miller, 312-997-3643.
Yes, quite a big show.
It was a big show. We had a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm, surprisingly.
It was, I know. Thanks for everybody who contributed to our show this week. Our guests, David Jepson and Corinne Grousebeck, as well as Brett and Sandy for their contributions every week. Thank you as well to you, my dear friend, Brian Hawkins.
Thank you.
Ah, my pleasure. And President and CEO, Dr. Janet Slick, for supporting us each and every week to bring you this just plentiful, wonderful, very educational content that we do. So, stay warm, have a great week, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.